From the hard and soft studios of WHYY in Philadelphia, it's time for another cutting hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Making new plants out of existing ones is a popular pastime for accomplished gardeners. On today's show, we'll discuss the basics of plant propagation using hard and soft wood cuttings. Plus, a Texas irrigation specialist reveals how to figure out the exact amount of water your turf grass requires. And, of course, we'll take lots of your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and quixotically querulous qualifications. So don't dare diddle with that dial. It's all coming up like you having twice as many plants because you went wading in willow water right after this. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we will speak with a Texas irrigation specialist who's come up with a neat way to deliver exactly the amount of water your lawn needs to either survive, not die, or look great. You can make the choice. It could really save you a lot of watering money, especially during restrictive times. We'll also talk about how to make new plants from old by taking hard and soft wood cuttings. That's a lot to get done, so we better hop right to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Joanne, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike.
Well, thank you for making it, Joanne. Where are you?
I am at the beach in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. Well, what beach?
I had just left Margate.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. Perfect day for the beach.
Did you say hello to Lucy the elephant?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I did.
All right. Very good. And but you are not a beach liver, I presume. You're on vacation.
Yeah, I just ran down for the day. I just had to go.
And where are you when you're not at the beach?
I'm in Woodbury, New Jersey.
All right. Very good. Well, you keep it all inside the same state.
Yes.
What can we do you for?
I have four raised vegetable beds, and three of them are doing stellar. Everything's coming out, well, almost everything. But my tomato plants, for the first time ever, I didn't get any tomato plants. The first set of plants that produced fruit, as soon as the fruit was ready to pick, they were the golden pear tomatoes. They're great in your salads. The plant just shriveled up and died, as if it had never had any water, which is not the case. So I pulled them out, and I looked for bugs. I looked for fungus. I didn't see anything. The other plant closest to it is thriving. The plants behind it, thriving. They stopped producing fruit, and now the two plants closest to the one I tore out, they have also shriveled up and died, so I have to rip them out. So my question is twofold. One is this just standard blight, and if so, how do I get rid of it?
No. Every gardener I've ever met has the most incredible case of disease phobia. Now, have you been planting in these raised beds for a while now?
No, they're new beds this season.
Oh, okay. What did you make them out of?
We have gorgeous soil at my house, and we also added some organic compost.
There's no such thing.
Well, that's what my sister got, and that's what she said it was.
So uh-huh. And what would inorganic compost be made of?
I'm afraid to answer that question, so I don't know.
Did she just give you bulk compost? Was it in a bag?
My sister buys a ton of it and has it put in the driveway, and then all of us, the gardeners, we all just come and take whatever compost we need.
Okay. So,
and everything's thriving except the tomatoes.
Okay. So you filled your raised beds with this compost of unknown origin.
With compost and dirt.
Your own dirt.
Yes.
How have you been watering during the dry times?
I have a sprinkler that's set up closest to the tomato bed, and, you know, it oscillates. So it fills the tomato bed first, and then behind the tomato bed is potatoes, which are not in a raised bed. They just went into the ground. So it waters those two things first, and then it goes to the other direction and waters the other beds. I usually water in the morning, or I water at night, depending on what my morning routine is. I try not to water during the day so they don't burn up.
No, that's the wrong thing. Watering in the night is the worst for your plants.
Okay.
By letting them sit out at night, you could have caused this. How often have you been watering?
Every couple of days.
And how long at a stretch?
Oh, probably about an hour or two at a stretch.
Okay. And you said you've actually pulled plants out of the ground and replaced them, right?
I did not replace them. I pulled them out of the ground and just left the other plants that were there.
Okay, that's good. What did the roots look like?
They looked like they had just been taken out of the pot that I bought them in. It didn't look like they really had
grown
deep enough into the soil.
Huh. Okay, so your roots never spread out, even though you didn't plant them in their pots or with any constraints or anything, did you?
Nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah,
no.
That's highly unusual. What have you fed your plants?
I haven't fed them anything because I've never fed anybody anything, any of my plants anything, and they've always flourished.
Yes.
So the only thing I did different this year was the compost.
Yes, but there's only so much food that's in remnants of soil. I mean, for instance, if DHS came by your house and you explained, no, I've never fed my children, nothing, I'm not doing anything different now, they would still take them away. So I would immediately go out and get a good, high-quality organic plant food. I really like seaweed and fish mixtures. Give the plants that are out there a feeding. Try to get some organic mulch like shredded leaves on the surface of the soil. And I would actually do a little CSI. I would actually dig around at the base of these plants and try to spread these roots out in the evening and then really soak the soil only at the evening, not wetting the leaves. Try to get these roots to spread out because that's kind of weird. And give them a feeding. I'd also like you to go to our website and read through the tomato planting and tomato growing instructions. There may be something else that you'll latch on to. But I can tell you that, yes, for a year or two, people can often get by without feeding their plants. After that, it catches up to you when the nutrients have all been taken from the soil.
Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Yep, I'll let you know how my cucumbers respond to that, too.
I'll be waiting with bated breath.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jerry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Jerry. How are you?
Very good. Mike, I've been trying to grow some corn for about, attempting to grow corn for about 5 years now.
Okay.
I plant like 3 to 4 dozen plants. And for instance, this year I got like one good size corn off plants, maybe three half size, and the rest of them are all diseased.
Where are you?
I'm in the suburbs of Chicago.
Oh, okay. You're planting corn. What kind of corn?
Sweet corn.
And when are you planting it?
Like mid-May.
Okay. And
by like the 4th of July. This year it's growing really good. It was about, some of those stalks were about waist high.
Mm-hmm.
They were on the 4th of July.
And then what happened?
It seemed like they were growing good all along. And just like I got the corn developed. And just prior to a week ago or so, the corn developed like a foamy appearance on the outside of it. It was a whitish gray. It was foamy in appearance, and it looked like it had the appearance of large kernels.
Yeah, it's corn smut.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an edible fungus.
Right, exactly. Yes.
Are you growing your corn in full sun?
Well, actually, no. It's a 200 square foot garden. It's right next to the garage, so it gets about 4 hours of direct sunlight.
Okay. Well, I can tell you your corn's not getting enough sun. You could probably get much better results if you had twice as many plants. You really need a minimum of 36 plants to get any kind of decent results. And really, it's when you get up around the 100-plant level that you really start to get healthy plants and good ears. Corn is a sun hog. It wants to get as much sun as you can get. It desperately wants water. Corn uses a lot of water. It needs a lot of water to put that biomass on. And it wants most of that water to be delivered at ground level, not necessarily wetting the leaves. I know you have a tight garden, but I bet you're also planting your corn too close together, which is encouraging the smut when you get humid weather. And corn needs nitrogen. There's nothing better you could feed your corn once it's up and growing than corn gluten meal or composted poultry manure, something with a nitrogen content of like 10% and just nitrogen. Because when you give a mixture of nutrients to a single nutrient plant like corn, it doesn't know what to do with the other stuff, and it can cause problems.
Yeah, I think the fertilizer had a protein meal in it for nitrogen.
Well, you know, that's corn gluten meal is a protein meal that supplies nitrogen. But what I'm saying is, for instance, if you had a little bit of that for nitrogen, you had some other element for phosphorus, you had another element for potassium, that would be a good fertilizer for your tomatoes and other fruiting crops. But corn is not a fruiting crop.
Okay.
Corn is a giant grass. It wants sun. It wants water. It wants nitrogen. It wants to be all out in the open.
Well, just, I can give it all those things except for the maybe 4 hours of sun. That's it.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. And it might not be the right crop for you.
Okay, so maybe I just won't be able to grow the corn then.
Corn is a very specialized backyard crop. You really have to have the right conditions. Now, I will say I have fought the same kind of constraints you have, and I've gotten a couple of decent crops over the years, and it's very rewarding, at least until the raccoons find out. But there's really nothing.
Maybe if I spread the plants out a little bit, give it a lot of water, some nitrogen, maybe I can get...
You got to get that sun in there, man.
Get that sun in there.
Yeah, don't deceive yourself. You'll just have corn envy.
Gotcha, okay.
All right, Jar?
Some areas. Yeah, thank you.
All right, good luck, man.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn everybody with a cool season lawn containing fescue, that's the best cool season grasses for shady spots, that now is the prime time to spread some compost and overseed the bare spots that are inevitable as fescues grow in clumps rather than run like bluegrass. But don't you go telling your sod to slow down just yet, because we'll be right back with a way to water your lawn perfectly, how to start new plants from old, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, hard and soft wood cuttings. Yes, you can make more plants from the existing plants in your garden. We'll deliver a little primer on how to get started doing that. And we'll have lots more of your fabulous phone calls. But now we have a special guest who has designed a system that will help our listeners in areas like Texas and Oklahoma specifically and exceptionally to limit the amount of water they have to use to keep their lawns alive through the record-breaking heat they've endured. Dr. Guy Phipps, director of the Irrigation Technology Center at the Texas A&M University College Station campus. Dr. Phipps, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Yeah, thank you. It's nice to be here.
It is nice to be here. Nicer to be here than to be in Texas, I hate to say.
It is hot.
Well, and you've been historically dry, I believe.
Yeah, it's the what they tell us, the climatologists, is that it's the driest 9 months ever on record. And it's not classified yet as our most severe drought, because that lasted 3.5 years. So we'll see how things go from here.
Yeah, but you hate when somebody who records the history of the weather uses the term ever.
Yes. If it's bad, yes.
So your timing, however, sir, would appear to be good, as you appear to be at the center of a new kind of, I'll call it a multimedia tool to get started, that can help homeowners manage their gardening and lawn care watering much more efficiently, according to your press release, to within a tenth of an inch of what their plantings actually require. So, in some ways it seems almost cruel because you got no water, but in another way of looking at it, you couldn't have done this at a more important time.
Well, it's really important because, we have many of our cities are on water restrictions. And so you only have like a 1 day, maybe 2 days a week that you're allowed to irrigate. And so the natural tendency of people is to just, turn on their system, turn on their irrigation and just water for, a long time. And so what we're seeing is that people really over-irrigate. So this is a way that gardeners, homeowners, will know exactly how much water they need, and that way they won't over-irrigate when they irrigate.
And unfortunately, this really does just apply to the state of Texas right now, because it's my understanding that the heart of the system is a computer program that asks you to first choose the Texas weather station you are nearest, and then that starts with the calculation of how much rainwater you've had in the last week, if any, and what your temperature and humidity have been, which are crucial in terms of deciding how much water, say, a lawn, which this seems to be predicated towards, really needs.
The way that this works is we have automatic weather stations that we download the data either via the phone or direct internet transfer. We use solar radiation, temperature, relative humidity, and wind, and then that goes into an equation, a very famous equation that then can calculate water requirements. And then the next step is to make that easy to use. And so the way we've done that is an interactive website with drop-down menus to make it real easy for the user to pick their location, pick their weather station, and then get customized irrigation recommendations.
You have, as we've mentioned, you're going to plug into your local weather station. That's going to give you a rough calculation of what the conditions have been like. Then you're going to choose a type of watering, whether it's landscape, gardening, crop, or your turf grass. And then what I love about the turf grass is apparently you get three choices. And the first choice is, I want it to be as green as a golf course. And then the next choice is something in between. And the third choice is, I want to keep it from being dead.
Yes. What we found is that there's a good compromise between good-looking turf and still not using a lot of water. And it just happens that amount of water is almost half of what it would take if you were wanting it to be as green as a golf green, something like that.
So the homeowner could stand to save a substantial amount of money if they're paying directly for their water. And as I believe you've been quoted as saying, if everybody followed this, and not even common sense, beyond common sense, kind of Vulcan logic technique of watering exactly correctly, it could lessen the need for water restrictions or make them less draconian when they need to be applied.
Yeah, definitely. The data we have is that here in Texas, we're looking at maybe 40 to 50, maybe as much as 60% of the water, depending where you are, that's used in landscape irrigation is actually wasted. So there's really lots of room here to reduce that waste of water that would help everyone out in times like these.
Now, the basic watering advice I've always been advised to give, and this is from people at other universities and people who've been in this business for a long time, is to, in normal times, and I'm old enough to remember normal times, about an inch of water a week is the recommended standard for most gardens and lawns and things like that. But you've also apparently really approached the very serious topic of how much is an inch? And you seem to have come up with a very clever way of helping them figure out that inch with, is it called the Aggie Catch Can method?
Yeah, the Aggie Catch Can. It's a improved design of a device of a can that is specifically designed to determine how much your irrigation system puts out. The design we have, there's lots of benefits to it over some existing products set out. But yes, that's available, and we encourage people to use that or some other device, go out and measure their rate of irrigation, precipitation rate. The Aggie Catch Can, that is available to the public. We have a special, it's used by professionals, but we now have what we call a homeowner Aggie Catch Can kit that comes with five of the cans and the stands with instructions on how to use them.
Yes, and these, I should point out, I saw some images of them. You're calling it a can because that's a cute name, but it's actually a plastic cup that looks a lot like some types of a champagne glass or a wide martini glass. And
Here in Texas, I've been told that it looks perfect as a margarita.
That's exactly the adult beverage I was trying to bring to mind. And have you learned over time that this, call it a margarita glass shape, is more effective at getting a really accurate measurement than the typical rain gauge, which is really just like an oversized test tube, all the ones I've seen?
Yeah, it has two advantages over just a regular catch can. One is it has a the top, the opening is wide relative to the size of the cone. You know, it's kind of cone shape with a, and what that does for you, you catch a bigger area, which gives you more accurate reading. Plus, you don't have to run your system as long to get a good reading.
This is wonderful. I'm upset that it's only limited to Texas. We do have a lot of listeners in Texas, and I will point out to them that they can get all this information at the Texas A&M website, and we'll put a direct link up at our website. But what about our friends who are having very similar problems that you have and have very similar climates, like Oklahoma? Could they just pick a weather station that seems to mimic the weather they have been getting or haven't been getting, for lack of a better term, and plug it in and get some valuable information from you guys?
No, unfortunately not. What I would encourage them to do is, one, you still can measure your precipitation rate of your sprinkler. You still need to know that. Depending what state you're in, some state do have similar websites like our website. What these are called ET websites. ET as in evapotranspiration.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it is, and that's the scientific term for this. If you just have a weather station, you can get software with that station that will calculate ET for you.
Well, we urge our Texas listeners to check out your website, get their Aggie Catch Cans out there. Our listeners in other states to search for the ET website nearest them. We'll put some information helping them up at our website.
Yes, and then they can also contact their local county extension office to find out if ET information is available and, you know, where they're at.
And that's at the heart of all this.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for being a good example. Thank you for being with us today. Dr. Guy Phipps is director of the Irrigation Technology Center at Texas A&M University's College Station campus. He joined us from his office at Texas A&M today. Dr. Phipps, thanks for being on You Bet Your Garden.
Okay. You're very welcome.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Connor, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I am doing well today, Connor. How are you?
I'm very well. It's finally stopped raining here for a couple of days, it seems.
And where is that, Connor?
I'm in Glenside, a few miles outside of Center City.
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You know,
sure.
You know, there's probably, how many Glensides do you think there are in the whole country, Connor?
You know, I realize as soon as you clarified there that there are probably a lot more than I thought.
Yeah. You're in Arden.
I actually don't know. How many, do you know the answer to that?
Yes, 17. What?
Oh,
come on.
Crazy.
No. You know, but if I bet you if I knew for sure or not, I might make some money.
Yeah.
All right, Connor, in one of the 17 Glensides in America, what can we do for you, sir?
Well, sir, I have some good friends who just came back from Europe, and they brought me a bag of tulip bulbs from Holland.
Right.
My question for you is kind of how can I plant those in a pot? My issue is I move pretty regularly, and I don't want to put them in the ground because I'd love to have them with me wherever I go. And my research all brought up forcing tulips to bloom in the winter months, and I'd rather, you know, mimic their natural cycle if I were to plant them outside. But have it be in a pot.
Yeah, you don't want to get involved really in forcing tulips. There are three or four varieties that are considered relatively easy to force. But otherwise, the chilling time is really long. The conditions have to be critically controlled. And most people just don't have the room and the patience, much less the fact that with any real cool trick in horticulture, you're going to blow it the first couple of times and before you learn how to do it. Now,
sure.
Now you say you move around a lot. So are we changing jobs? Are we skipping out on the rent? Are we staying ahead of a bail bondsman?
None of the negatives yet. I'm recently in grad school, so I'm finishing up school here soon, and I'm hoping that leads to an exciting new adventure. And before grad school, I was living in New York City, and before New York, I was in Alabama, and before that, I was in the Harrisburg area. So it's been kind of a fun last 6 years.
Good. Okay, so there's two ways to do this. The good news for you is that it can be done. It's a matter of fact, it's not that hard. But you do need outside ground. You do need land outside.
Okay.
The easiest way to do this is to wait till the ideal time in our area to plant bulbs, which is after Halloween, but before Thanksgiving. And in this case, you would just plant the darn bulbs somewhere, let them come up in the spring, enjoy the flowers in their natural setting, allow the green leaves to die back down, and when those green leaves had turned completely brown, you could then pull the bulbs out of the ground, which is what they do in Europe and throughout much of the country here where people want to plant other things. Just take the bulbs out of the ground and store them in onion bags or kind of semi-damp peat moss in a cool, dark area until after the next Halloween. That's the easiest way. A lot of people like myself don't leave their bulbs in the ground over the summer anyway, because if you plant things on top of where the bulbs are underground and then you water and fertilize those topside plants, you rot the bulbs underneath, which is why a lot of tulip bulbs don't come back. Now, if you want to be more modular than that, what you would do is you would get good size plastic pots with real good drainage holes in the bottom. I would try to make them really heavy plastic.
Okay.
You would invest in a bag of soil-free mix. Some potting soils will be appropriate, but mostly you want a bag that's super light, whose contents are only milled peat moss, perlite, vermiculite, and then a little compost or composted forest product. If you have some homemade compost, or you have a friend who has some compost, you can mix like a quarter of that into the pot. And then you would plant your tulips in the pot at the same depth they would tell you as if you were planting them in the soil, which is to allow for the size of a tulip over top, if you know what I mean. You'd be
right.
Planting them two tulips deep. Then you would dig a hole, take the pot outside, drop the pot into the hole so that the rim of the pot is just below the soil line, fill in over top of it with soil, mark it well, and then if you need to get out of Dodge in the middle of February. Just wait till the soil's unfrozen. You can take your tulips with you. Or you can allow them just to come up normally. They'll bloom the same way in the pot as they would have in the soil. And then when all of the stuff is brown, then you just lift the pot out of the ground and put that in a cellar someplace until, again, the following Halloween.
That's great.
Either way will work. What if you're going to use the pot, drainage and light soil are essential. There's very few pots I buy these days that I don't bang a couple of extra holes in the bottom.
Sure. All right.
All right, man?
Yes, sir. Thank you for your help.
All right. Good luck, Connor.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind all of our overplanted listeners that Philadelphia's Philabundance and similar food banks across the country would love to receive donations of your extra homegrown goodies to help feed the hungry. You can find the food bank near you by visiting the Feeding America website or by typing food bank and your location into a search engine. But don't go tallying up your tomato tender just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and a primer on starting your own plants from hard and soft wood cuttings. I'm Hard and Soft Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens, in just a few short minutes, as opposed to those agonizing long minutes. We'll tell you a little bit about getting started on propagating your own plants from hard and soft wood cuttings. Sometimes the best place to find a new plant is growing out of an old plant. We'll tell you how to do it after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Roger, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I'm in Joplin, Missouri.
Well, nice to speak to you, Roger. What can we do for you?
Well, I have a question about what I like to refer as my miracle jasmine plants. You probably know that we had a tornado on May 22nd, and my former apartment was destroyed. Our former apartment was destroyed, and my wife recovered our jasmine plants outside from the rubble of our apartment, and we've replanted them in pots, and they're thriving at our new apartment and in the weather here. I'm worried about what will happen when I bring them in for the winter. In our previous apartment, they were next to the sliding glass doors that faced east, and they got plenty of sunlight in the winter. But in our new place, the sliding glass doors face to the north, and I'm concerned that they won't get direct sunlight in the wintertime, or enough sunlight anyway.
Now, Roger, let me figure out what's going on here. These are essentially always house plants that you have always taken outside in the summertime?
Yeah, that's right. I put them out in the spring when it gets warm enough and
right.
Take them inside in the winter.
And how long have you had them?
4 or 5 years, I think.
So, by the way, congratulations on not dying. That's always a good thing to do. I'm pleased your plants made it through as well. And are they were rescued from outdoor rubble, but they're still outside for the summer?
Right. They were in pretty bad shape when we dug them out of the rubble, but we replanted them in pots, and they're just doing great right now.
Oh, okay. Very good. I'll tell you what, man, and apparently in your new place, you've really only got this one situation that's even vaguely appropriate for them.
Yeah, these sliding glass doors are the only big light, outside light entrance. We have some small windows, but I don't think I could get the plants there.
So. That's fine. Now, the one thing I'm worried about, I want to make sure, in their new situation where they're going to be this winter, is there anything they weren't exposed to previously? Are there any kind of heating vents or radiators really close by?
No. In the previous apartment, there was a heating vent near them, but I kept them as far away as possible from the heating vents.
And did you miss them a lot in the wintertime?
Oh, I watered them a lot less than the summer, but I watered them a little bit each week. So
I think you're probably going to be okay, Raj. What I want you to do is continue what you did previously. Bring them in at around the same time of year, put them in their new place, and observe them carefully. If they're getting a little bit less light than they did before, then they should get a little bit less water as well, because they won't be processing it as quickly. I'm presuming you didn't feed them over the winter before.
No.
Okay, good. You won't want to feed them this winter as well. And then if they start to look a little bedraggled, if they start to look a little leggy, like they could use a little bit more light, just go out and take a look at your options in artificial light. There are some really interesting LED plant lights out there now that are a little bit expensive to buy, but they use virtually no energy. Failing that, you can probably rig up a nice fluorescent light with a cool white and a warm white bulb to give them some extra light. But wait to see how they react. It sounds like you've got a good thumb for these things. But in the back of your mind, as you're going out to home stores and garden centers, keep an eye out for what could be the perfect plant light. And it might just be that you might have to install something above them or shining next to them that'll bring them back up to their former glory.
Okay, well, that sounds good, Mike. Thanks for your help.
Well, thank you for an inspirational story. We're glad you and your Jasmine made it through the weather.
All right, thanks.
You take care, Raj.
Okay, bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mike, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Pretty good. I have a question about planting a hedge on a street that I live on. I live on a pretty busy street, and I would like to plant some sort of screen that would afford me some privacy and also cut down on some of the noise.
Where are you?
I'm in Merchantville, New Jersey.
How far away from your actual walls of your house would this be?
About 20 feet from the house, and okay, about 15 feet from the front porch.
Oh, okay. The things that work well as hedges, you know, boxwoods, yews, things of that nature, you know, their natural topping out size is around 4 or 5 feet.
Oh, okay. What are some plants that would grow to like 6 or 8 feet if I was going to go that direction?
Well, in your case, obviously, this is an area that sounds like a good place to avoid the traditional screening plants like arborvitae and Leyland cypress. Are there power lines right above where you're going to put the hedge?
No, they're across the street.
Oh, okay. That's always a nice change of pace. Well, I'll tell you the two things that I always recommend, and one of them I haven't been talking about lately, but it just popped into my mind, and that would be high bush blueberries. In a situation like yours, J.I. Rodale said if you want to install a barrier that's going to have a good height to it, have a lot of seasonal color interest, why not put in something you can eat?
Oh, that's a good idea. Sure.
So he advocated tight plantings of mature high bush blueberry plants that were already several years old and allowing them to fill in like a hedge. There's not much you have to do. They kind of train themselves naturally in that habit. And then you would get delicious blueberries, or you'd be able to fight the birds for your delicious blueberries in the summertime. And in the fall and early winter, the coloration of the leaves is drop dead gorgeous.
So, but they would lose the leaves in the winter?
They would lose their leaves, but they have a very thick habit. There are a lot of branches on blueberries, and unlike stone fruits, these things don't require thinning out. I'm thinking of my friend George DeVault, a farmer who has maybe 12 lanes of very mature, established blueberries in full sun. And you can't walk through the bushes, man. You have to go down to the end of the lane. So
now, how high do they grow? Like, how, if I buy the plant?
George's are like 6 feet high. And that's not untypical. There may even be varieties that you can buy that are totally undwarfed, if you know what I mean, that will reach the maximum height. The other thing that I'm in love with the idea of is ornamental grasses, because you get so much bang for your buck. They pop up super fast. They have amazing four seasons of interest. You get the ones that do some plumes on top in the wintertime, and just don't cut them back. You know,
and they would be easy to keep in a line, so to speak.
They are beyond easy. Matter of fact, you have to do a little bit of research and make sure you plant grasses that don't become invasive, that don't spread to other people's properties. But there's a huge world of these ornamental grasses, all different textures, colors. A lot of foolish people cut them back at the end of the season, but there's absolutely no reason to do that.
Okay. When should I plant any of these plants?
Well, the question is, can you find them? Fall is always the best time to plant. So if you could find the right ornamental grasses or blueberries in the fall, you'd get the best buys. You'd get plants that were a year older, and their survival rate would be incredible. But you might also want to take some time. If you're going to do the blueberries, you need to heavily acidify the soil. You need to work in a lot of peat moss and organic matter. And you may not be able to find the plants in good supply that you want right now. So it might, if you can, go for it. Otherwise, you would install them in the spring.
Okay.
All right, Mike?
Yeah, thanks for your help.
All right, good luck, sir.
Thanks.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Making new plants from soft and hardwood cuttings. Our question this week comes from Judy in Cincinnati, who writes, I may have missed it, but I didn't see any information on propagating plants using hard and soft wood cuttings in the A to Z Garden Answers section of your website. I'm looking forward to trying this for the first time, specifically some soft wood propagation of roses, clematis, miniature butterfly bush, and miniature lilac. Do you have any tips on how to do this? Well, you didn't miss much, Judy. Up till now, rooting cut roses from bouquets has been the only such article at our site. This is due to a combination of cowardice and lack of experience. I've started my own plants from seed successfully for over 20 years, have divided endless perennials, including quartering the world's largest hosta with a chainsaw, and have layered many plants, some even intentionally. But other than roses, I have never rooted cuttings. My landscape is already pretty crowded. And every spring, foolish companies ship me boxes full of new perennials to, quote, test. If I tried to make even more plants, my wife would likely follow through on her threats of having me committed. But it is a fun technique to try. So I crack some books to add to my rose rooting experience and will attempt to deliver a short primer on the subject. Please don't use me or this as your only source unless you have a good sense of humor and or need new material. And don't try and root your cuttings in water alone. Yeah, it looks cool to see Medusa's hair fill the bottom of a jelly jar, but that tangled mass of ghostly roots will not enjoy their move from aqualand to landland. To survive in soil, plants should develop their roots in something that has the texture of soil. All right, let's start with softwood cuttings. In the spring, 2 to 4 weeks after all risk of frost has passed. Cut off new healthy shoots that are about 6 inches long, with several obvious little bud nodes visible on the stem. Now that was easy, right? Good, because everybody does things a little differently from this point on. And virtually every, quote, regular source will tell you to use rooting hormone. Luckily, softwood rooting time is also when there's an abundant supply of fresh willow growth handy, from which we will make willow water to use instead of that unnatural hormonal powder. Fill a 5-gallon bucket with lots of fresh new willow cuttings, add cool water, let it steep for 24 hours in the shade, and pour the liquid into jars or bottles. Use this tea, rich with natural rooting hormones, instead of plain water during your propagation adventure. Now let your freshly cut stem sit in some willow water for about an hour while you get everything else together. Some sources will tell you to root your cuttings right in the ground after adding a lot of soil-free mix to create a happy little rooting zone. I prefer using a large pot that contains nothing but soil-free mix and a smidge of compost. Either way, don't jam the cuttings in. Push your, quote, soil aside. Remove all but the topmost leaves from your cuttings. Gently position them a few inches deep, making sure there's a couple of those little budding, notey things underground, and then recover them gently with more soil. Water well with your willow water, mist the cuttings with your willow water, then rig up a plastic bag or place a big jar close over top to retain moisture. You want it to be humid in there. Keep it out of direct sun, keep the medium moist, mist daily, and be patient. This part will take 6 to 8 weeks. When you see new growth or can't stand the suspense anymore, peek underneath and discover roots where those buds once were. Pot each new cutting up in its own pot filled with half soil-free mix, half compost. Ditch the humidity tent, but keep the soil somewhat moister than you would for regular plants. Dappled sunlight would now be ideal. Then, about a month or two before your first expected frost, carefully install your cuttings where you want the new plants to grow. Then be patient again. It'll typically be several years before the new plants are mature enough to flower. For hardwood cuttings, everyone mostly agrees that you take 6-inch to foot-long sections after the plants have gone completely dormant for the winter. Then the advice is all over the place. One option is to bury the cuttings in a trench that you've prepared with lots of soil-free mix. In cold climates, bury them deeply, right at or below the frost line. In warm climes, a shallow grave. Either way, mark the location well. Then dig them up in the spring, when some might already have developed little rooties. Position them straight up in their trench, water them with willow water, and think good thoughts. That fall, move any winters to their permanent homes. Now be warned that there are as many different ways to do these things as there are gardeners doing them. The only thing two gardeners agree on is that the third gardener is wrong. And some plants are going to respond better to certain tricks and tweaks than others. So collect advice from several different sources, including advice geared specifically to the kind of plants you want to propagate. Then experiment with several different methods. And above all, be patient. Rooting cuttings can make seed starting look like a rocket ship taking off. Well, that sure was a hopefully helpful introduction to the wide world of plant propagation, now wasn't it? Luckily for yous, this and every question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read any of those questions in detail, just click the link at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Yikes, my producer is threatening to soak me in willow water if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please tell us where you live, put the actual subject in the subject line, and check first to see if the information you seek is already waiting for you at our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you can click through to the question of the week. Find the solution to hundreds of garden problems. Hint, hint, just like yours. Hint, hint. in our Garden Answers A to Z section. And or listen to this show, listen to old shows, and or download this week's podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Fred Snyder. Our webmasters are Baneful Rich Banowitz and Sarah the She-Devil Kazar. Our departing intern is Jessica Mandick. Say it ain't so, Jess. Even more distraught, Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, makes cuts both hard and soft. I'm Rootless Mike McGrath, and I'll see you next week. It's the dirty little secret of composting. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss whether or not you really have to sing Turn, Turn, Turn to your compost piles. Plus, a heap and helping of your fabulous phone calls.